turning astray of the path that was left long ago. All we leave behind, time after time, is a legacy with nothing to show. Now our country is lost, and it's not without cost, for there's many who struggle every day. And I think that it's time we start crying for our nation and bow our heads and pray. If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see?
Hey everyone, this is Steve Donahue with the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. Today's episode is number 115, and what we're going to talk about today is the laws of marriage. There are four different laws regarding how to have a good marriage, and I'm taking these primarily from a book by Jimmy Evans, I'll put in the link in the show notes to his book as well as to his website, but he's got some good information in there, lays it out pretty good, and so I'm going to be taking some of the information from him as well as kind of digesting it my own way and presenting it to you, but it should be a good message for you. I haven't had a show on marriage here in a while, so this should be good, and of course, it is important to be able to have a strong marriage if we're going to be able to leave a legacy. All the statistics show that if you're going to have a strong family, having a strong marriage is important, and passing on a legacy of that to children is something that is foundational to building a good legacy. So we're going to talk about that today. Before we do that, I wanted to just bring in about a few introductory material. First of all, I'm going to ask a little bit differently today. Rather than registering as a user of the website, I want to encourage all of you to go over to iTunes if you at all can acquire iTunes and subscribe to the RSS feed. This helps me to be able to move up in the page rankings of iTunes. I think right now I'm at the very, very bottom of page one. And so if someone were to search for family legacy or spiritual legacy or farming legacy or, you know, any kind of thing like that, I would come up, but I'd be at the very bottom of the page. And so the best way to be able to get me higher up is to have more subscriptions. And then the second, actually better than that, is to not only have subscriptions, but to fill in a review at iTunes. And so if any of you like the show and you want to support me, best way of doing that today is this week sometime get over to iTunes and subscribe and then fill out a comment or a feedback and you know, give me as many stars as you feel comfortable doing. And that will help in the show and help me to get some more listeners. So I appreciate you doing that. And then second up is make sure that you are looking at our various affiliates. We are affiliated with various companies that have something to do with being a legacy builder and provide resources for us in that regard. And the two up for the day, the first one is U.S. Legal Forms. The reason why I'm affiliated with U.S. Legal Forms is so that you can acquire at a very inexpensive cost some of the documents necessary for leaving an estate legacy, a financial legacy. And so in other words, there is a need for every family to have at least a will, power of attorney, advanced medical draft. That's kind of the basics of all estate plans, and you can acquire those, I think, for like $50, husband and wife couple from U.S. Legal Forms. Best way I know of getting that requires a little bit of work and a little bit of paperwork filling out and everything, but once that's done, it's a great resource. So check out U.S. Legal Forms. Second up is Liberty Classroom. Liberty Classroom is the work of Thomas Woods, and it is designed to help you learn history, both Western civilization as well as American history. There's also a logics course on there, and there's also an introductory to Austrian economics, which is like free market capitalism. And all of those resources are their classroom lectures of the college level, and so you will have all kinds of extra reading material if you want, but otherwise you can just listen to the podcast or listen to the download, the MP3. You can download the notes for the section. There is a place where you can take some quizzes under each of the sections. You can also dialogue with the professors during some of their correspondence time. You can sometimes even talk to them on the phone. It's just a great resource. All of that is available to you for $99 a year. So just an incredible resource. If you've got kids in high school and you're wondering what to give them for history curriculum, this would be the place to go. So check out Liberty Classroom. And then finally, if you like the show and you want to support the show, the best way of doing that is become a Legacy Partner. You can read all about being a Legacy Partner on the website. I encourage you to do that. And this helps me as well as gives you some resources that is about $50 worth of value for $30 a year. So check out becoming a Legacy Partner. And with that, that takes care of the introductory material. So now let's go ahead and talk about the main topic for today's show, which is the laws of marriage. And as I mentioned before, many of this is coming from Jimmy Evans' book and his articles and talks that he has written on. Again, I'll have reference in the show notes to that. But the main reference for this biblically is from Genesis chapter 2, verses 24 and 25, where it says, "Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother, be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh." And then in Genesis chapter 2, verse 25, it says, "And they were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed." And so from these two verses, you can develop four basic principles or four laws about marriage that God had instituted with marriage to help us find our way in how to have a good marriage and live under God's plan for us in that. And the first one is this, it's the law of priority, the law of priority. Genesis chapter 2, verse 24, it says, "You shall leave your father and your mother." The idea of leave here means to loosen bands. It really carries the idea of a man to be released from his primary obligations and his associations up until the time of which he is married. A son is primarily, his role is that of a son, and he is to be under the authority of his father and his mother and live into their hands. And then upon becoming married, he is to loose those bonds and he is to be change his priorities from being mostly devoted to his parents to becoming mostly devoted to his wife. And the priorities there change. There's only one relationship in the scriptures that is supposed to be of higher priority than the relationship between a husband and wife, and that is the relationship with the Lord himself. Other than that, the number one priority should be our husband or our wife. I think it's interesting to note in Deuteronomy chapter 24, verse 25, that it was given to men once they are married to spend a year at home without other obligations so that they might be able to prioritize their time and please their wives upon their marriage. And Deuteronomy chapter 24, verse 5 says, "When a man has taken a new wife, he shall not go out to war or be charged with any business. He shall be free at home 1 year and bring happiness to his wife whom he has taken." So this goes to show the importance and the priority that is placed upon marriage, so much so that they are to be released from war, they're to be released from all the other obligations and all the other things that would come in and choke out whatever seed of covenant faithfulness that had been planted with the marriage. Now, there are all kinds of challenges that we face in our life that can interfere with our first priority, which is our priority of our marriage. Obviously, the first one that pops into our head is in-laws, and that's the whole idea of being able to leave a father and mother. And still in marriages, what we find is that there is this tendency to rely upon the relationships that we had prior to marriage. And so often a wife will continue to rely upon her father to provide her with things or to get advice from, and that undermines the relationship where there should be a first priority should be the husband. And so rather than the wife going to her father for advice, she should be going to her husband for advice. And the husband still continues to have a tendency to rely upon his mother for cooking or rely upon his mother. In fact, I remember some people who, they still go over to their mother's house to, wash clothes, or they make comments about how the husband or how the mother cooks better or cleans better or does laundry better than the wife or something like that. And what that's doing is it's basically setting a higher priority with those older relationships than it does with the new marriage. And it can set it off to a wrong start. And so the priorities there need to be changed. Another challenge can come in with kids, because obviously when kids come around, our priorities can sometimes be bumped. And certainly when new mothers are nursing and they're tending to their kids all night long and all day long, and when they're infants and this kind of stuff, it can put real pressure upon the priority relationships in that home. And yet it's very important for husband and wives to remember that they are to be solely devoted to each other, and that the children are not to take the place of that relationship. And so we need to be careful that we are not putting our kids at a higher priority than we do with our spouse. And the third one is church. Now, I know sometimes you might think that church is supposed to be of a higher priority. No, our relationship with the Lord is to be of a higher priority, but church itself is not. And by church, what I mean is many of the activities that are associated with it. I have known many of pastors who have destroyed their families and because they have been so devoted to doing church work that they haven't done any family work. And this is not the route to go. Pastors particularly need to be careful that they are not allowing the church work to interfere with their relationship with their wife. And, you know, oftentimes wives feel guilty if they ask their husbands to stay home or they ask their husbands to spend time with them when they could be off visiting or taking care of parishioners or something like that. But that's not just true with pastors. It's true not only it's true of just anybody who is committed to the Lord. They'll be sucked into the responsibilities and the church responsibilities and all the obligations that are there. It can often cause a bridge or, you know, a separation, a wall between husbands and wives in their relationship. So church work can often be an area of conflict that can need to be reprioritized. And then, you know, work obviously can be one. And it's really easy, particularly for men, to get caught up in their work. They get a lot of praise from work. That's where their income comes from. We're designed to work. God has equipped us to work. We have that natural desire to work. That's where we see a lot of satisfaction. And it's really easy to get caught up in the work and to lose our priorities. And so how many times have women complained, wives complained about their husbands spending too much time at work, and even when they come home, they're still working in their minds or something like that, and they have not redirected their minds so that their priorities can be on their husbands. Of course, I remember the story about a man who was committing to work and was focusing his time and efforts and everything on his work, and his wife was wondering what he was doing, and he said that the whole reason I'm working is because you are my highest priority, and all the while she was wanting him in his time rather than what he was committing to at work. And so sometimes it's just a communication issue, but nonetheless, the priorities need to be set squarely, that the husband and wife take responsibility and higher priority over the work. And then also hobbies can often get in the way. Around here, of course, in our hunting season, you rarely see the men. They're always out in the woods hunting. There's nothing wrong necessarily with hunting, but certainly if it takes a priority over the relationship with a husband and wife, there's something wrong there. Women can also have different things that they like to do, hobbies that get in the way. Television can sometimes be an entertainment or an activity that can get in the way of a relationship. And, you know, lots of other kinds of things can be a challenge with that. So the bottom line is that the relationship that we have with our husband or for our wife should be of highest priority apart from our relationship with the Lord. And so set priorities and then protect those priorities. Make time for what is important. We have a tendency to think that, we naturally only have so much time in the day. And unless we prioritize that time based upon the priorities that we want in our life, that time will be etched away to the extent that we will not be able to have the kind of prioritized relationships that we desire. We can't let the leftovers be given to the one who is supposed to have the first fruits. Now, of course, the Lord is supposed to have our first fruits, and after that, our husband or our wife. And so oftentimes, though, the husband comes back drained from work. The wife is drained. End of the day, they give 20 minutes to each other. And it's the least they have. And it should be the other way around, that we should save some, we should rest up, we should have we should give the best to our husband and our wife. Song of Solomon, chapter 2, verse 15, says, "Catch us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the wines, for our vines have tender grapes." The idea behind that is that there are foxes that will come in and spoil the vines. And that is in the context of a marriage. And there are lots of pressures that can come up on a family, pressures that will come up on a marriage that will want to reprioritize your life so that it gets out of whack. And it's important that we make sure that we keep the law of priority in place. So that's the first one. The second one is the law of pursuit. Genesis chapter 2, verse 24 says this, "Therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife." The word "join" there also Probably in the King James Version, you're probably familiar with what it says, shall cleave unto his wife. Now the word cleave here, to join, it means to adhere to, as glue adheres to one another. An alternative translation is to pursue. And the idea behind this is that someone is pursuing someone else so that they might follow with them and be with them and adhere to them. That's the idea behind it. And so when we see that word, we shouldn't think of it in the sense of, a cleaver separating, but in fact, exact opposite. Rather, it's a pursuit that results in attachment or adherence. If you look at a magnet, when a magnet comes together, if it's on a positive, if their polarity is correlated, they will come together and they'll actually be drawn to each other. That's the idea, that there's this pursuit of each other to the point where they are drawn and adhered together. And then this requires work, as all things good do require work. And so we have to work at it. I'm often amazed at how you can watch in all areas, not just in human relationships, but also in the elements of nature. You think about a deer, for example, and how a buck will pursue a mate. And while they're pursuing that mate, they'll go without food. They'll do everything that they can to pursue that mate. And that's the way it is a lot of times with courting and with dating on the human level. You know, men will do extremely strange things in order to please their wife-to-be, or, at that point, their fiancé or girlfriend or whatever it might be. And wives, likewise, will do the same thing in order to please their future husband. And then for some reason, once we get married, we stop pursuing. And that should not be the case. I remember when I was pursuing my wife, or she wasn't my wife then, she was, my fiancé. Our girlfriend, I was courting her, or however, I'm not exactly sure the time frame of all of this that took place, but I remember we were both in Blacksburg, University of Virginia, Virginia Tech, I'm sorry, what a slip there, Virginia Tech, and she would be student teaching, she student taught her last year, and I would drive, I didn't have a car, so I would ride my bike all the way across campus from one side of town all the way to the other side of town just to slip a little note underneath the door so that when she got home, she'd be encouraged to find that note about how much I liked her and thought of her and all that kind of stuff. And, that's the kind of thing that we do when we're pursuing somebody. And then when we get married, it seems like we forget. I guess we take those things for granted, and that should not be. Women often, after divorce, they'll go and get themselves in shape. They'll go, go to the gym and they'll get all lean and try, so that they know that they can try to impress somebody else. And yet all the while, if they'd put that same effort into their own relationship they currently have, how much better would it be? The same thing is true, with guys who, used to be able to do all kinds of things and serve their wives or serve their girlfriends or whatever it might be and do all kinds of things, be very attentive. And now it seems like, they don't get out of the chair while they're watching ESPN when their wife comes in the door or something like that. And, that's just thoughtlessness. And we need to continue to pursue our spouses. Another area that I think is a tendency is that, when women are going out on dates and, they're trying to please the one that they're dating, they'll get all dressed up. They'll look really nice and sharp and, they'll be pleasant, put on a nice smile and good attitude and that kind of stuff. And then once marriage sets in, they walk around in sweats and, I didn't know the word frumpy. My wife introduced me to the word frumpy. And I guess those are comfortable, clothes that women wear or something, but they're not the most attractive by any means. And, that's the way it is. It seems like we take those things for granted rather than trying to continue to pursue and continue to please the one that we are in love with. Why do we work so hard to impress and please complete strangers, but then when it comes to pleasing and impressing our spouses, we fail to do that? We take them for granted, and we should continue to pursue them. Feelings often follow the activity. I am reminded of a story I heard just the other day on a radio station regarding our relationship with the Lord, but it applies also to our relationship with our spouses as well. And it's a story about two employees who were disgruntled with their work, and they had been going to work, for several years at the same place, and they had gotten tired of it, and it seemed like they didn't like working with the people that they were with, and the environment that they were in was just not what they wanted anymore, and so they decided that they were both going to quit on the same time. And so they get all dressed up. These are two female employees, and they get all dressed up, and they, you know, the last day of work, they go around with great attitudes and happy hearts, and they're pleasing to everybody. They do their work efficiently, and they just put all their effort into it and all their effort into relationships. And by the end of the day, they realize, you know, we kind of like working here, and this is kind of what we want to do. And so they ended up not quitting. And that's the way it can be with relationships as well. When we pursue it, when we put effort into it, it seems like the feelings follow. And yet, if we sit around waiting for the feelings to arise, they never seem to do that. And so we need to be sure that we are pursuing with energy and with effort, and then our pursuit will become a delight. Revelation chapter 2, verse 5 gives us a solution if we want to change our course and start doing the things that we stopped doing. And that is, he's talking to, in the book of Revelation chapter 2, is some of the seven churches, and in that context, he's saying that this one church had lost its true love, and so he says that the solution is to remember from where they have fallen. In other words, remember what it was like, and that's the way that we restore also that same pursuit. Remember what we used to do, and then repent for not doing it, and then the last one is to redo or do the things that we did at first, and that's the solution really to restore that pursuit that we had once lost. And so let me encourage you as a husband and wife to pursue each other as much or more than you pursued to attract each other in the first place. Do so again. Then number three is the law of possession. The law of possession. Genesis chapter 2, verse 24 says, "And they became one flesh." This is the idea of no longer being separate entities, but becoming one flesh. And obviously in intercourse, literally, they become one flesh. But more is meant than just that. Generally, it is the concept of integration. Now, integration in the dictionary means combining one thing with another so that they become a whole. And isn't that exactly what happens with marriage? Combining one with another so that they become a whole. And the idea is that they are to be integrated. They are to be whole. We talk about family integrated churches, and it's to be a whole family is together, worshiping together. Well, that starts with being whole as a husband and a wife, to be integrated together as a husband and wife, not to be separate entities, but to be together as a whole. Now, obviously, you're still going to be physically separated to some extent, but even that can be somewhat mitigated in that there is this intercourse that takes place that you become one physically as well as spiritually in many other ways. And the scriptures say that a house divided against itself cannot stand. And the idea behind that, of course, is that if there is a house that is divided, that husband goes one way, wife goes another way, they have their separate desires, their separate interests, their separate lives, that house will not stand. There must be a house that is together for it to be able to stand. You know, God owns everything anyway, and so when we bring everything together and we lay everything together and bring everything together, all we're doing is we're submitting our two lives together before the Lord to become one. When we become married, you no longer have the option of acting alone. We have no option of living separate lives. You know, it surprises me how many people have separate checking accounts. And, you know, they've got a wife who operates one checking account, another one operates. Now, we have in our home, we have separate checking accounts, but they both have both of our names on them. And so we know everybody, both of us know where the money's going and everything like that. It's just easier. She carries one checkbook and I carry the other one because she has responsibilities for certain things and I have responsibilities for certain things, but we both are in agreement. We both know it's not like her money and my money or anything like that. We have money together that we both use. And this is often a problem, especially when both husband and wife work outside the home, is that they, you know, they have her money and his money and they don't combine them, and he spends his money the way he wants to be spent and she spends her money the way that she thinks it needs to be spent. Well, this is just a disaster. It is a disaster waiting to happen. And instead, what needs to happen is that there needs to be possessions that are united, and there must be an integration of these things. There must be a one flesh that comes together, no longer two. You see, the whole idea of the first person singular pronoun should be taken away once marriage occurs, and instead everything should be the first person plural pronoun. So all the I's or mise or mine should be replaced with our, we, and ours. And so there should be no restrictions to access, because what one possesses, the other one possesses. And so they shouldn't withhold money from the other one. They shouldn't withhold anything from the other one. This is, of course, referred to in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 when it comes to sexual relationships. It says, now concerning the things of which he wrote to me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Nevertheless, because of sexual immorality, let each man have his own wife, and let each woman have her own husband. Let the husband render to his wife the affection due her, and likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Do not deprive one another except for consent for a time, that you may give yourself to fasting and prayer and come together again, so that Satan does not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. So there should be a complete surrendering of oneself to another, to where there becomes one flesh. And no longer are you in control of yourself, but you are now responsible to the other person with whom you have married. And then number four is the law of purity. The law of purity. We find this in Genesis chapter 2, verse 25, where it says, and they were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed. Now, obviously, what this means is that they were fully and completely exposed, one to the other, and they were not ashamed with that. And the sin had not entered into the world at this point, and so they were able to be completely and totally pure before each other. The sexual differences could be openly expressed. They were unhindered and uninhibited in their intimacy. Their most sensitive areas could be exposed without fear. They were without shame and had no need to hide or cover up. It was a beautiful picture of purity. And then we see in Genesis chapter 3 that sin entered into the picture. And as soon as sin entered into the picture, what happened? They began to cover up. No longer were they able to expose themselves freely and faithfully to each other, but they wanted to hide themselves both from God and from each other, and so they covered themselves up. So how do we overcome such impurity in relationships? Well, first of all, don't hide yourself, but expose yourself. Confess your sins one to another. Express your heart openly, honestly. There shouldn't be any kind of secrets, no hidden thoughts, no hidden desires. All that should be exposed and expressed. You know, what happens over time, though, in marriage relationships and relationships in general, is that we get hurt and we put up a layer so that we no longer get hurt. And then we get hurt again, we put up another layer. And before long, what happens is that we're like this onion with multiple layers all the way around us. And we can't really get into each other's hearts because we've been so hurt and all these things have developed. And so that needs to be overcome so that we can be fully exposed and all those layers, those peelings can be peeled away and we can be totally before each other exposed. And so we express our heart, we express ourselves outside and inside to each other, exposing most vulnerable parts of us to each other. And then we repent where there is sin involved so that we can be clean and be pure. Forgive when there's sin involved so that there's no longer a shame associated with that sin, but there might be forgiveness and freedom. And then put up fences around your marriage so that the chance of failure and the chance of falling diminish. Don't leave gates open. I think it was, I forget which theologian now it was that first start talking about the eye gate and the ear gate. But those are the two main avenues by which we fill things into our mind. It is through the eyes where we gather a visual picture of something, and then through the ears where we hear a situation or something that comes into our mind. And so we fill our minds through the ear gate and the eye gate. And unless these things are protected by what we put in and by what we hear through those things, then we will more likely fall to temptations that are around us. And so we can protect and put fences around our eye gate and our ear gate. Well, these laws are like all the other laws that we read, and that in that the more that we follow them, the better it will be for us, and they are still true. You know, sometimes we think about principles like this, and of course we've analyzed them, and the scriptures do not call them laws, they give them principles, and yet in reality they're like everything else. When there is a principle that is involved and we follow it, it is good for us, and there's blessings that follow. It is best when we follow them and reap the blessings that come with them. Do you want to leave a legacy of a strong marriage? Well, make your relationship to your spouse your number two relationship, apart from your relationship with the Lord. And then pursue your spouse with as much or more zeal as you did to catch them in the first place. And then number three, integrate everything in your life with that of your spouse, so there's no separateness to your life. And then finally, expose yourself completely, fully, and unashamedly before your spouse. Well, hopefully that helps. Hopefully that gives you some encouragement and some challenge, some things to work on as married couples, and that you can build a strong marriage so that through that strong marriage you can have a strong family, and through that strong family pass on a family legacy that will not be forgotten. And with that, this has been Steve Donahue with the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. What will you do today to build your legacy?
Time after time is a legacy with nothing to show. Our country is lost, and it's not without cost, for there's many who struggle every day. And I think that it's time we start crying for our nation and bow our heads and pray. If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see? What happened in the dash between your birth and death? What will you do to change your legacy? But just like the plant that withers away, we will leave many seeds behind. If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see? What happened in the dash between your birth and death? What will you do to change your legacy? Change your legacy. What will you do to change your